I would like to introduce Ryan Lackey, and they're talking about ephemeral communications, why and how.
Hi, everyone. I'm Ryan Lackey with Cloudflare. And I'm pleased to be back after a long time. I'm introducing my panel, which is John Callis of Silent Circle. Alyssa Shavinsky of Glimpse.
Hi.
And Nico Sell of Wicker. So we're going to talk about ephemeral communications apps, or applications that are short-lived, very short duration storage of messages. The funny thing about this is it's actually used to be the default. It used to be that storage was incredibly expensive. Disks were in the multi-tens of pounds, hundreds of pounds range, big rack-mounted devices, everything else. You were really careful about what you saved. You wouldn't just retain everything. And the default was just to erase all your content. That got solved, I guess, in the 80s and 90s to the point where it wasn't worth deleting text information, and then it got to the point where video and everything else were sort of persistent. But then there was too much, and you had all this content, but you could never find anything. So pretty much search engines, web, AltaVista, Google came about, even if you had all this information, it would just sort of disappear. And you could pretty much hope that if this information existed about you anywhere, people wouldn't find it, or at least it wouldn't come immediately to mind when you type something into a web browser. And there's another advantage that pretty much everybody using the internet was sort of like a professional user, academic type people like that. So it wasn't really too scary. And that was actually true even through a lot of the early 2000s. You could assume people were using the internet for specific purposes. They were using it to find information. They were using it to do various things. But they weren't using it every second of their lives. But something changed. That's pretty much what happened. And now everybody carries around a supercomputer in their pocket that's constantly connected, constantly storing data, using it to talk to everybody all the time. And it's pretty scary. It makes it easy to store everything by default. Your Facebook, Twitter, all your history, emails, lives everywhere. It's crazy. And some people started to notice this a little while ago, and they noticed certain applications. And Fred Wilson from USD had a great quote here. Pretty much privacy by being the default was the state of nature of the internet, and then it went away due to this technological change. And then people started to think, oh, what would it be like to go back to the day when you assumed everything wasn't logged? The new generation of users, every year there's always new people using the internet for new applications, and they have a different perception of what things should be. So I'm gonna let the panel actually get started on what they do, and come back to some of this stuff later. But maybe start with John of Silent Circle and let him describe his application.
Sure. Thank you very much, Ryan. You can see up there is a screenshot of how things work on Android and iOS. We started building the chat system that is Silent Text, and as we were building it and already thinking about this sort of thing, people that we've been talking to had requests. One of the ones I thought that was compelling was that someone said that they had been texting with a coworker, you know, stuff about work stuff. And the coworker says, you know, can you come over to my office and talk about something? So they come over to their office, and the coworker's phone is sitting on their desk, unlocked, texts up with someone else. And the person said, so I can't really trust this coworker with the rude comments I might make about someone else. Because, you know, we all say things that are intemperate. And texting makes it really easy to sound a little more emotional than you are. And you know, and to have the tongue-in-cheek there, and there aren't just enough emojis to really get the right emotions down. So the request was, can you make these things go away? And that's how we got to burn notice, was that we said, yeah, data destruction policy. There's no problem with data destruction. It's one of those things that's enshrined in law. And you make it so that when you text, there is a default delete on it. And there is, for example, a guy that I do an awful lot of texting with who just started texting me out of the blue. And I keep like a one-day burn on everything so that, you know, we talk about security and this, that, the other thing. And I know that in general, things will get deleted after a day.
So maybe next, Nico from Wicker could talk about Wicker.
Sure. So I like that you brought up Snapchat. Actually, a year ago at this conference, Stroh Friedberg did a great assessment of us, Snapchat, and Facebook Poke. And at that time, you could Google and find Snapchat's master key online. Facebook didn't even have any security on there at all. They were just, it looked like it deleted, I guess. And they left the stage saying, indeed, Wicker leaves no trace. So we were really proud about that. And again, we were founded before Snapchat before Snapchat had launched. But we came about it from a really different place. And that's that we essentially said, hey, we've made this seamless, secure protocol, and we think that everyone in the world should be using encryption. And so how do we get everyone to use encryption? Well, let's give them something that they've seen in the movies, right? Everyone's wanted self-destructing messages. So that's how we got to that equation. And Wicker is actually the fuse for Mission Impossible, and that's where it came from. But I think what's really important to remember there is that the use case here is spy to spy. If you're sending a message spy to an enemy, I don't care how good the tech is, it's not going to disappear. And that's kind of what's happened with Snapchat here. You know, I think there's a lot of education that needs to be done, that this is about trusted parties, because otherwise it's DRM, and we all know how that is. So it's more about just that betrayal generally happens after the fact. And it's more just about cleaning up your messages on someone else's phone is really how I think about it.
Cool, great. Maybe now Alyssa will talk about Glimpse.
Hi. Glimpse was founded when Pax Dickinson and I really just fell in love with the idea of ephemeral messaging. We thought that it was really fun, and we also really believed in this threat model of, like, people you trust now. You know, like, you trust people now, but you don't necessarily trust them in 3 months or in 6 months. So you want things to disappear. But we didn't trust Snapchat. And that mistrust was proven out later with the hacks and the various, you know, legal actions that have been taken against them. So we built Glimpse to make really, really easy to use privacy. And we did it keeping in mind that Silent Circle and Wicker were already in the market doing really, really solid work on encryption. John actually was kind enough to take time and meet with me before we launched to help us craft our privacy policy. And we were using Wicker to chat along with Silent Text when we were getting the company started. So we wanted to be in a really different place in the market that wasn't really directly competitive with them and was more directly competitive with your classic social media. So we're really, really proud to be, I think, one of the only encrypted networks that is primarily used by high school and sorority students. And they don't necessarily care that we're encrypted, but they care that we're private in the ways that are meaningful to them. Their threat model is that they're hiding from their parents and their teachers and from drama on Facebook. And so we really work closely with high schoolers and with people in sororities and other very tight-knit college groups to figure out feature sets that they really love. So we have upload from text, which you can't do. Upload from camera, which you can't do on Snapchat. Like, if I want to send a cute picture of a bunny with his face in a tiny little shopping cart full of baby carrots, I can't do that on Snapchat unless I have the bunny in front of me. But with Glimpse, I can send photos of bunnies and goats and all these, like, things that are really fun to me in an ephemeral way. So that's been the engine that's really helped us take off with young people. They have a really low switching cost. And something as simple as being able to upload a photo from camera and write a full screen of text has been enough to get them to start using Glimpse. What's up next will be group messaging. So like really, really easy to use encrypted group messaging. The one other thing that's really worth mentioning as you situate Glimpse in contrast to Silent Circle and Wicker, Silent Circle and Wicker really are like spy to spy. They really are encrypted in this extremely special way. With Glimpse, we make security compromises that they wouldn't make, so we're able to have usability that wouldn't be present otherwise. So we don't encrypt your social graph. It's not a secret on Glimpse who you're talking to. It's a secret, the horrible thing that you've said.
Yeah, that's exactly right, because we actually don't know who our users are. We have no idea who any of them are, which you can imagine going and trying to talk to investors and giving them to give you money, and they're like, so tell me about your users. Say,
Yeah. Similarly, we don't require contact information.
Which is one of the interesting things. So we've talked about Snapchat a lot. I tried to get them to come. They weren't willing to show up. They don't really have a long history of engaging with the security community. But they've done a lot of great things. Like, you can attack them for maybe making some mistakes in how they implemented things, but they really did move the industry from log everything again in like the mid-2000s to creating this new sort of concept, or going back to a very old concept of being able to chat with people directly. And for the users they have, which is sort of a weird like bimodal distribution of kids using it for evading their parents, and then people who should know better using it for things that they shouldn't really be doing, it mostly meets with the first threat model, maybe not so much with the second. So it really, you can't pick any of these tools and say they're perfect for everybody. You have to know what your actual threat model is, and maybe you're willing to make sacrifices on security for convenience on certain applications. Like, people don't have a 50-character passcode to unlock their phone every time, things like that. Well, people, like, maybe I do, but other people don't, yeah.
And so what I think is really interesting here, though, too, about it is the kind of minimal viable product that's happening right now, and with Yo, for instance, and Snapchat and some of these others coming out, is I wonder if you can survive doing minimal viable product in the future when you're holding massive amounts of very sensitive customer data. It'll be interesting to see as it goes on, because I think, you know, we've taken a longer-term view here, as you have, and see who wins in the long run, but I think we'll be left standing. I don't know if others will.
I don't think it's a minimum viable product issue with Snapchat or with Yo. Like, the moment where Snapchat had that massive hack this past New Year's, they had enough money and time, in fact, because the hackers had given them plenty of notice to have solved that, and they simply didn't because it wasn't important enough to them. And with Yo, people think that Yo is this really small app, but actually Yo had in fact gotten in front of Robert Scoble, like well before it got in the kind of mass media attention. And as anyone who's used Yo knows, Yo was subject to a hack where all of your cell phone data could be, like, it was subject to some really awful hacks, and I still can't figure out how to delete Yo from my phone, like, in a meaningful way, not just delete the app, but, like, my account is gone. And this isn't because Yo isn't well-funded at this point. They raised $1 million. This isn't because Yo isn't starting to mature as a company. It's because they really don't care. The investors don't care. The founders don't care. And, you know, where does that leave us in the industry?
I think that's an important thing, because most of the mistakes that we have seen have been they don't care mistakes. They didn't delete the files. They renamed the files. They didn't actually delete them. You know, you got told about a problem on your network and you didn't do anything about it. It's a negligence thing, not really even a beginner slash competence thing.
I think Glimpse is a really good example of what Snapchat could have done if they cared. We had a much smaller team. We've only raised $200,000 to date, and we've had like four of us, so three developers and me, and we built something very similar to Snapchat, but not subject to many of the hacks that they're subject to, and it didn't take us all that long. Like, it took us about 2 to 3 weeks to really securely build in the system that uploads your contacts, you know, and helps you find your friends through contacts, and we used rate limiting, and we also enable you to be hidden. And it's that simple. Like, if Snapchat had just improved their rate limiting and allowed users to hide themselves, then Mark Zuckerberg wouldn't have had his phone number leaked.
So it might be interesting to bring up some of the other ways to compare the applications. There's just security is one, and competence and negligence, but there's also how you use these things. There's the other applications like Secret, Whisper, tech secure, and maybe we can talk about how those applications fit into some sort of category system of what you use different ones for and what are the special characteristics of the various applications.
Well, as a mom, I really worry about Secret and Whisper, and that's not Moxie's Whisper, but the Whisper that's one of the top in the App Store right now, and because kids think that those are anonymous, and my daughter knows how to tell whose secrets those are.
Mm-hmm. Well, which I think is perhaps part of the learning experience. I mean, they aren't anonymous apps. I use both Secret and Whisper, and I like them both. They have different feels to them, but they're unattributed. They aren't anonymous at all. And in both cases, part of the fun is guessing who it is.
Do you think they planned it that way?
Yeah, I believe they planned it that way, absolutely.
But Whisper was started as a suicide help. Maybe with Secret.
Yeah.
And then there's something interesting, of course, you go to how people behave when they have anonymity, as you've seen. If you go to any sort of internet forum, 4chan, anything like that, where stuff is essentially anonymous or at least unattributed, you see different emerging behaviors in different forms. Like you can have some where people have very civil conversations and it's just sort of the setting and the context of that kind of stuff. It's not, it might be informed by the level of anonymity and the kind of technology, but it seems to be a community driven thing as much as anything else.
That's part of what all of these have to do is figure out what sort of community they want. When I first started doing collaboration apps, I spent a lot of time talking to Randy Farmer, who's definitely one of the real pioneers in this and knows more about communities than anyone else. It's interesting on Secret that they have now limited things so that only friends of friends can comment on a thread. Anybody can see it, but you have to be one hop or two hops to be able to comment. And they say in the little box that you type in, please be civil. So they are limiting the amount of trolling that can go on and creating a social environment where it's highly likely that the person you're commenting on is someone you know.
Well, I think the community that you're going after is really important and really what should define us. And I'm founder of Roots Kids at DEF CON here as well, and work a lot with kids all the time. And that's really was one of the reasons that we founded Wickr. Was I felt like my daughters deserved the same level of encryption that the spies were using, because in my opinion, data brokers are a way greater threat to my friends and family than Snowden. We've got the worst data breakers out there, like Experian, that are selling lists of rape victims and erectile dissufferers and dementia sufferers for 7 cents a piece. That's at the worst end of it, but there's thousands and thousands of theirs out there. And with our app, we've now, my crypto team was killing me because we made them add Google, we made them add graffiti and stickers and doodles in there. And why are we doing this? I say, because my daughters say it's really important. Now I actually use all those features myself every day. There's really something to it. And that's part of what Snapchat really, I think, did show, is it is a new kind of messaging, and picturing and writing on pictures is definitely a new way of communication that I've just learned myself.
So we'd be interested in bringing in the audience at this point, if you have any questions for any of the panelists, things we could discuss, things like that, if you want to start forming up. We've got more things to discuss, so just as you're getting ready.
We could chat all day.
Yeah.
Go ahead.
Sort of a two-part question having to do with not knowing who your customers are. What happens when somebody who has perhaps used the service for a while decides, or, you know, they lose their credentials and they say, well, you know, I'm really unhappy if you can't reset my account and you don't have an email address or anything like that. How do you handle that? And then also the question of, do you really not know who it is when you have information about who they're, I haven't used your app, so I don't know, but I presume that there's some sort of social graph there where you kind of know who these people have in their address books, if you will, in your app.
If nothing else, you have their IP connection history and everything else. So.
Well, maybe you don't have the hopefully you don't have the history if you're being an ephemeral app.
Yes.
I mean, in our case, what we want to do is to permit you to have as much privacy as you are comfortable with. It's something that we have worked out and tested that you could go get a gift card from a department store. You know, a $100 gift card will pay for 1 year of the account. And we will accept that, and we test that to make sure that it continues to work. So you can create an amount of unattributedness that you want. We don't keep server logs on those things. That's one of the things that is a commitment for us, particularly because I believe on the privacy end of things, the less that you as a service are keeping, the more that you'll get dragged into fights that you really don't want to be dragged into. So your defense in these things is to make sure that everything is on the endpoints and you don't have it. Creating something where people opt in is different. And if you create an account and you don't give me a contact email address and you don't do anything and you lose your password, I'm terribly sorry, you're stuck. Because you could have done things to give yourself a safety line and you chose not to. And that's part of the service that I'm offering, is that I'm giving you a coil of rope and you can tie a noose with it if you really want to.
I think that's right. I mean, users don't want us to give their accounts to other users, so we have to take, you know, appropriate actions around that. With Glimpse, if you want to set up an account on a phone, a second phone, then we're only one phone per account right now because of the way our encryption works, then we say you can log into this device and you'll lose everything from your old account, or you can create a new account. And I think that's important. If people care about privacy, they understand that that comes with certain usability issues around things like making accounts too easy to fake or too easy to recover.
I would say this is one of the beautiful things about having an ephemeral messaging app, because we don't have a password reset. That would be absolutely unacceptable on email, I think. That wouldn't work, but there's no word password reset right now, and what do we tell people? Well, yeah, you might have lost 5 days of messaging, but that's it. Just get a new account and start over. If there's a password reset, that means someone has your password. If someone has your password, then bad guys and the FBI and lots of people can get your password. If we would have had passwords when the FBI came to me and asked me for a backdoor, I wouldn't have been able to successfully say no. And so as we move to the future and we'll have messages that live forever, we're really looking at solutions there and how do we do a password reset and things like giving people a USB drive with their password on. But legally speaking, if someone else has your password, they are not legally protected with it. They must give it up. And that's something that's really important to think about, are the legal ramifications here. Also something with the way that we built our system, it's a zero knowledge system. And so it took us a long time to figure out how to connect people together without us knowing who you are. I think my tech team came up with a brilliant solution. So instead of viral growth, like WhatsApp is doing, I say we've invented bacterial growth. So more like yogurt than a disease, because it's beneficial to society. And what we do is, if you allow us to, what we'll do is do a cryptographic hash of your address book that we send up to our servers, and if someone else has you in their contact book, we'll match the two of you if you've opted in, but we still have no idea who you are and who is in our servers. Growth is a little slower this way because we're not forcing everyone into our system. We're not automatically uploading everyone's contacts and SMS history. So one of the biggest complaints we get is, I can't find my friends. But we think it's a better way to do it, but it definitely makes things tricky.
We do something similar at Glimpse where, you know, we similarly hash the user IDs. We do that for Facebook, we do that for Twitter, and we do that for your contacts. And we do the same thing where if both parties have opted in, then we can match you. But again, we're really different from Wicker and from Silent Circle because we really do have the social graph, and that lets us be a lot faster and do a lot of things that we otherwise couldn't do, like sending messages is faster. Again, because on our app, we're not hiding the social graph. Like, I understand that that metadata can be really useful and important. It's not to say that metadata doesn't matter, but it's to say that there has to be some kind of privacy space and privacy apps in between Facebook and Snapchat and in between apps that are, you know, designed for spies.
I don't know. I mean, PC Magazine just did an extensive review of all the top messaging apps in the world, and we beat WhatsApp and Snapchat as the best overall messaging app on features alone, because we have more filters, stickers, and doodles than they do.
I don't think it works that way, though. It doesn't work that way. It doesn't work that way. I mean, you look at Yo, and Yo went so viral, and people loved it because it was just one click. And, like, I used Wicker, and I like Wicker, and I respect you a tremendous amount. But, you know, users want things that are easy and simple. And if adding more features was enough to make users more happy, then like Facebook and Snapchat and all these companies that have tons of developers and tons of money and tons of research would just be more feature-rich. It's not that simple.
No, it's just that we're the best messaging app.
Cool.
And oh, by the way, we're secure and we respect your data and we don't abuse or lose your cool. personal information.
Okay, let's move on to the next question.
Yeah.
Okay, so this is, I guess, a different type of technical question. You mentioned Snapchat and these other companies not fixing these potential leaks because they were negligent. But what if it isn't negligent, but rather an economic misalignment? They don't have the sort of impetus to actually fix this. So how does your business model, your economic model, create the drive to make sure that you maintain your security?
Well, one answer is the three letters FTC.
I think that's a really hard problem, right? Like, companies just aren't properly incentivized to do security because it's cheaper to just apologize later and because consumers aren't necessarily making choices based on that. So I think you need to be really mission-driven. I mean, it's really obvious, like, Silent Circle and Wicker are really mission-driven, Glimpses too. And, you know, we find ways to make the business models work really well. But my perspective is that, you know, that's obviously, you know, a problem.
And so I'm going for a long-term business model instead of a short-term business model. But here's one of the tricky things, is we've got $1 million budget that we spend on hackers and the largest bug bounty in the world and, you know, do hundreds of thousands of dollars worth of pen tests constantly, while companies like Frankly that compete with me instead take that $1 million and buy fake user downloads and look like they have a lot more users, and it pushes up the rankings and that gives them more users. And so it'll be interesting to see in the long run which of those wins. But yeah, there's a couple different ways of doing it.
Okay, next question.
This has to do with law enforcement security and privacy against those people. When I created the idea for the Warrant Canary, I was hoping that it would find kind of broad acceptance, especially by internet service providers, ephemeral, you know, service providers, and that hasn't happened. And it especially hasn't happened even in the companies that have adopted it, in the sense that they've only made sort of a broad blanket use of the Warrant Canary if they've received a warrant, where my original idea was that it could be individually targeted so that people could inquire using the Canary whether or not they were the target of a particular warrant or national security letter. So my question is, why hasn't, in your opinion, on the group, the Warrant Canary found really a home or a use?
I have no idea.
I didn't hear it either.
Yeah.
It's really hard to hear the question.
Oh, sorry. Okay. Oh, the Warrant Canary system where you post a posting on your website saying, I have never received an NSL.
Yes, we were actually the first company in the world to do that. And it was a really stressful day. This is when LavaBit was having its issues. And we were wondering what to do. What if we get served with a national security letter? Well, we've got a zero-knowledge system, so nothing would really happen. And we said, okay, well, let's go ahead and put in the transparency report that we have not received a national security letter or any other secret orders, and we do not have a back door. Since then, Apple followed us, and now there's 11 other companies that the EFF has identified that have done this. It's unprecedented ground. Who knows if it'll work or not? But it came from a really great place, which was librarians in the 1970s. The FBI was going and looking at book records to determine who was subversive and who wasn't. And librarians take privacy very seriously. When you check out a book, when you're done, they get rid of your record. And so what they did, they started hearing that the FBI was doing this, and all the librarians that didn't have a gag order started putting a sign outside their library that said the FBI has not been here. And it seemed to work really well at that point. And another part of that, actually, is after I started Wicker, my mom received notice that the federal government had accessed her library records. And she called me up and was like, I don't know why, this is really strange. I just got this letter, and I wonder why that is. And talked to some librarians about it, and what they said is, oh, if you're checking books out online, it does not have the same protections as it does if you're at the library in person. So good thing to know.
Yeah, so there are a lot of things that you can do, like warrant canaries. The biggest thing that you do is don't keep any data.
Yeah.
That part of that is also to make sure that you have servers set up well. I mean, we have ours in Canada and Switzerland intentionally because mm-hmm. of their history of respecting privacy and having government officials who are there to help you do this sort of thing. But having good relationships with them where you explain to them before they get upset about something that this is what we do, this is the service that we're offering, this is the sort of data that we have, and no, we don't have that, is one of the ways that you don't get one of those, is that, you know, they don't want to waste their time giving you a subpoena for data that you don't have. So having a relationship with people where it's well known that you do things a certain way means that you are extremely unlikely to get a request for the data that you don't have.
Exactly. And actually, one of the things that I've noticed with zero knowledge systems is that the amount of requests actually goes down over time. Mm-hmm. So if you're seeing transparency reports where the requests are going up over time, then that means they're giving good data.
Right.
Exactly. I noticed that when I ran an anonymous remailer for a long time. I got a few contacts from the Secret Service and FBI, and I told them basically exactly what I had, exactly what I could do, what couldn't be done technically. And they were actually pretty friendly, and then they stopped harassing me after that point. And it was pretty much the right solution. So definitely spend your money on technical solutions to these kind of problems rather than...
Yeah.
And a lot of it's very simple, that if you put up a privacy policy that says, mm-hmm. this is my policy dealing with disposal of logs, dealing with this, dealing with that, and you can show that that's what you have. You have a contract with your customers that you're supposed to do a certain thing. And ironically, the Federal Trade Commission that we talked about on the previous question would punish you for handing things over or keeping those logs after you said that you weren't going to. So, you know, this is also your best defense. You've made a commitment to your customers that you will behave in a certain way, and you are contractually required to do that. And that becomes your greatest defense.
I think that's right. I chatted with John when we were setting up our privacy policy, and that seems to be the best defense of your customers, right? If you have a privacy policy where you've stated your obligation to them and you have server architecture that supports that, then government officials, you know, there's only so much that they can do.
And on the other end of it, Snapchat, Twitter, WhatsApp, all of those services, Skype, if you read their privacy policy, pretty much what you're granting is a free, transferable, worldwide license for eternity to your content.
Well, Snapchat deletes after 30 days, and there's some utility to that if they want to deal with moderation issues. I understand why they're doing 30 days and not zero, given like their priorities and their customer base, but you know, if you're sending really sensitive material, 30 days is probably too long for them to have your data.
Cool. Okay, maybe the next question.
Hi. So, quick question, hopefully. Have you found any commonalities in user bases? And conversely, have you found any users that have surprised the hell out of you, groups of?
Yeah, John and I don't know who our users are, so they're very common.
I didn't hear the question.
Commonality in user base, how much is there? I mean, I know a lot of people who use both Silent Circle and Wicker. I think that we have a good deal of overlap in it, but that comes from the people who are using it. The real people who are wanting the real anonymity are actually few and far between, because remember, these are communication systems that you are using to talk to people that you know. And no matter how you set it up, you're going to give yourself some sort of identifier slash handle, and you're going to be telling that, distributing it, whatever, to people that you know. If you go down the line, Alyssa's doing something that is very nice because she's being upfront with her people and saying, this is the way that we behave. We are, in fact, making it so that you and your friends can create a social group where you can chatter among yourselves in a way that is conducive to things that you might do if you were in the same room. Mm-hmm. Okay. And it thus creates a different space.
The other direction to go would be something like SecureDrop, where you've got people submitting anonymous content, focusing on anonymity to a third party. That's a totally separate kind of system.
So with regard to Snapchat, there will always be the analog hole where people can take a photograph of what's being sent. Is there any technical solution for screenshots on the device preventing those?
I think your best solution is really a social one. It's called plausible deniability, because a picture of a picture can always be faked.
That's true.
There's no such thing as plausible deniability. There is reasonable doubt, but there's no such thing as plausible deniability. And the answer to you, what you're saying is no, there is nothing there. You have to have a certain amount of trust of the person that you are sending something to, because most of us now are carrying around 4 or 5 devices that all have cameras, and they can be pointed at each other. So really look at it like a data destruction policy. Look at it like something else. A constructed, fake-looking message that somebody made and lied about that you had done might actually be more believable than the real thing.
I have a surprising answer, which is that users don't care about screenshots. Glimpse built a tool that worked really effectively to prevent screenshots. It was an animation layer that ran over your photo. So any screenshot would capture a watermark on top of it. And because of the way the frame rates worked, if you took a video of the animation, it was really, really fuzzy. Like, the words were not readable and the image became very hard to make out. But when you would see the image on your phone using Glimpse, you could be like, oh, that's a naked person, or like, that's a really interesting gossipy message. And I thought, you know, we thought we just built like the world's greatest sexting app. We were so proud. And we were really surprised to discover that users just didn't really want this. It's interesting to talk about screenshots. It's intellectually interesting, but I'm not sure how much it's like a feature that people actually want to use day to day.
Yeah, we took out our anti-tampering. We used to have an anti-tampering solution in there that made it really difficult to take a screenshot, because if you moved a pixel, it would go away. And it worked really well. It would take people a long time, but it was a usability issue and people didn't really care. So we actually took it out of there too. It wasn't really that important, it seems.
Okay. We took out our screenshot protection and no one noticed.
Yeah, cool. Us too. Same thing, and no complaints.
Okay. Next question.
I didn't know you did that. That's cool to hear.
Right. So I'm actually not familiar with the three applications, but from what I've gathered from the conversation, it seems that the development teams behind them are relatively compact. So this is a bit of a layered question. I'll just jump right to it. How have the three of you approached insider threat?
Very good question. I think, again, it comes down to, you know, the social engineering contest that happens here gets 100% of the targets 100% of the time. So this is the number one threat that we all need to look at. You can't have any one person in charge of the core code. We've got several people that would have to change the core code and to do things. Because, for instance, you know, we don't want the threat of someone kidnaps your child and says, change this. And, or let me give you $100 million under the table to change this. Those are all very key threats that we need to think about. And we have...
There's two simple tools that we use, Git and GitHub.
Perfect.
That our developers are all checking things in, and we know who did them, and periodically we take a snapshot and we put it up to GitHub for review. So an insider who made a change would end up going through internal review, and we know who's working on what, and ultimately it will end up where anybody can go and see it. So the idea that an insider can do something insidious is greatly limited. Well, do something insidious and not get caught is greatly limited. And so publishing your source is what I would say.
So yeah. The counter argument to that, of course, would be, for instance, TrueCrypt. I'm not saying that there have been any problems, but of course, how long has it been before somebody decided to go through a major audit of that code base?
That's a very long other debate, and it's a very interesting one, but it's not clear that it has anything to do with insider threats, which is what you asked.
Mm-hmm. Right. Thank you.
Cool. Thanks.
All right, I'm just going to ask a question related to the previous one. Are all three of your applications open sourced? I just heard that Silent Text was. Is Glimpse?
Actually, the EFF would say that you're not open source,
yeah.
Though.
Well, it depends on what you mean by open source. Okay. If you mean, you know, if you mean there are people who think that they own the word open. And my source is published under a variant BSD license that says you can do anything with it except make money. You can compile it yourself, you can use it, you can give it to your friends, but you know, you can't build a competing system. This is not an OSI compatible license. But you can download the source and compile it and do whatever you want with it except make money.
I think that's what Glimpse is ultimately going to do. We're a really baby company. You know, it's actually like, I'm really honored to be on stage with Wicker and Silent Circle. We only launched in March, and we're only available for iOS, and we're hoping to build next for Android. It's going to be a good 3 months before we actually market ourselves as a security app. We need to do more. We just need to spend more time on that first. So we've been thinking about how we'd want to handle this. We are not open source, but I think following Silent Circle's model is probably what we'll want to do.
And we're looking at it, too, and wondering about that and saying, oh, do we do part open source and part not? And the main reason that we haven't open sourced our code is that we don't want a bunch of copycat apps out there that have done interesting things with it. Right? I mean, there's also a threat model there, but it's something that we continually think about. But I think it's important. I think within this community, a lot of times people equate open source with secure and closed source with not secure. And that's a dogma and something that I think there's a lot of ways to add trust and transparency. And I think that's what we all need to get better at every day.
Well, you can do code audits, right?
And yeah, so just today we actually announced two more code audits from ISEC and Aspect. So we've had the best groups of hackers in the world spend months and months looking at our source code every day. And two of them today verified that indeed we use the strong crypto that we say we do. It's been properly implemented, and they'd indeed found no backdoors.
Okay, let's try to get the last two questions.
As a developer, do you have any advice for someone that's looking to build ephemeral communication apps, or at least applications that have some elements of this type of communication?
Advice? The first bit of advice is actually care about what you're doing. Because really, the things that we've seen that have gone wrong, everybody makes mistakes. Fix your mistakes. Look at what you want for B to be your threat model. Look at your privacy policy. Look at how you're going to handle some of these things, and genuinely live up to what your own ideals are. And that's the really big one. That the technology is relatively easy. It's the execution that's hard.
It's a really crowded space. When I first decided to do this, it was a year and a half ago, and Snapchat wasn't yet on Android, and Facebook hadn't yet started to get into the market, and Line, which is about to IPO in Japan, is now going ephemeral. Path is going ephemeral. Facebook wants to do this. It's becoming kind of normative. So I think if you want to do an ephemeral app, the question is, okay, like, everyone's ephemeral now. Like, how are you different?
Yeah, there's a communications substrate company called Prodea, and they let you do a lot of programming in JavaScript, and they have a how-to and how to make ephemeral communication system there, and it's up on their website. So it really is normative.
Cool. And can we have a last question?
Yeah, so if everyone's ephemeral and we aren't protecting against screenshots, what sort of features do you think these apps should have that they don't currently have? What are the most important?
In our apps right now, or which apps? Sorry, I didn't understand the question. It's hard to hear.
What features would you like to see in your apps that aren't there?
I'd love to find a way to do a password reset.
I think community is what is really interesting now when I look at new apps that come out, because there are so many communications apps out there, and what can make an app different, surprisingly, is like what is the ethos on there, you know, what kind of moderation is on there, who else, you know, which friends of mine are on there. That's actually what's most interesting to me right now.
So talk to me about password resets. It's easy.
Right.
There are, the idea is, what do you want to solve? What sort of communities do you want to support? What sort of communications do you want to support? There are a lot of things that a bunch of people are overthinking, and if you don't try to do everything, say, in the security layer, you do it in the user layer, are a lot easier than if you try to prove that you can always do these things. I mean, for example, with ephemerality, as we've all said, you are not going to get 100%. You're going to get something that is completely and utterly usable and solves 99.999% of it, and that's actually easy. The last 6-9, you're not going to get there. Don't even worry about it.
Well, I'd like to thank the panel for contributing and working on these great applications that I use myself and that a lot of people use. And I'm really excited to see where they're all going to go in the future.
Thank you, Ryan.
Thanks for watching us.